Now we look at a local historic location which has come back numerous times. My next guest with his new book takes you back in time and then brings you right back to the present regarding a historical asset of Sussex County. And during this journey, you'll learn how this asset was much more than a school field trip location or a rock concert venue, as well as just how many times it has been on the verge of extinction, only to reinvent itself. Here to share some stories from his book, the story of Waterloo Village from Colonial Forge to Canal Town, is John Giles. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Chris. How are you doing today?
Anytime we can talk about history and solve some questions, and like I said in the intro, let people know that, well, you know, how many people do you think thought we saw Waterloo Village was some Disneyland recreation that was just a conglomeration of ideas from the past and didn't really know that what they were standing on was the actual history of that village?
Yeah, I don't think when it was a living history village that they really concentrated on the history of the village. It had period costumed employees who were taking people through on tours and things like that. But they weren't looking at the entire history of the village. They were just looking at a point in time that the foundation just wanted people to see. And then it morphed into a concert site, and it sort of left the living history aspect out of it for a lot of people, which was a shame.
Now, John breaks down the history into four eras: the Forge era, the Canal era, the Victorian and early 20th century era, and the modern era. The Forge era, I mean, what's surprising is just how few people could own so much land in those days. That was, I mean, when you start doing research back to the ways now business and land ownership worked back then, and when the individuals set out to do what they did, what they were up against, it's amazing that anything ever got done.
Yeah, it certainly is. The talent that those people had back then, you just can't envision the difficulties that they had trying to create an operating forge out of what was then frontier with very few roads, and those roads were bad. And iron ore is a bulk product, so is iron. So transporting the iron and the ore and the charcoal on those roads and trying to make a go of it, very difficult. And breaking virgin forest with just an axe and maybe a horse pulled plow, it's amazing what they could accomplish.
Yeah, a little insight for the listener right now. Route 80 wasn't there to travel up and down when you had the ore dug out. You had to go through some pretty hellacious traveling to get your product out to make the money.
Sure. And with iron, because of the Iron Act that Britain passed in 1750, they could not convert the iron into finished products. It had to be exported to Britain to be converted into plows and hinges and plateware and things like that, then transported back to the colonies to sell back to you. So in one afternoon, you could have bar iron sitting on your floor, and if you were allowed to process it, you could have plows or whatever the next day. But instead, it had to be shipped to England, then back, which in that travel, you had to pay for the cost of transporting to transatlantic travels, the ship captains, the merchants who organized the transportation. You had to pay the taxes and the levies to the British government. So, you know, it's understandable how the colonialists in America were pretty upset with the way things were going.
Talking with John Giles, his book, The Story of Waterloo Village, From Colonial Forge to Canal Town, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. If the Morris Canal was not to be, would there have been a future era for Waterloo Village?
I don't believe there would have been. The cutting of the forest to make charcoal for the forge cleared the land, and that enabled farmers to come in starting in the 1790s, and agriculture replaced the iron working business. But agriculture only would have supported the owner of the land and a few farm workers, would not have supported enough people to keep a village like Waterloo going or to even expand it as it did after the canal was there. So agriculture, it may have even continued to this day, but it would not have generated the economic impact for the Byram Township and Sussex County area as it did.
Something fascinating from that era, too, was, again, when we think of engineering and design, all this high-tech science, and, you know, today we have lasers and computers. Back then, it was going to be initially just Lake Apacon that was going to feed the canal, and they had means and ways and calculations of how to to at least get an estimated guess of whether or not enough water power was going to come out of the lake and enough water would be coming out of the lake. I mean, they were off by a little bit, and they were able to adjust by that. But the engineering of an act in a project like this with what they had to work with, again, just amazing that it got done.
It is amazing. And Waterloo was unique on the Morris Canal. Waterloo is the only location that had both an inclined plane and a lock. In addition, the lock was a combination lock and aqueduct. It's the only place in the canal where that feature existed. So Waterloo was really a special place and still is a special place when you talk about the history of engineering and the history of canals. Waterloo is right up there at the top of the list.
And the old axiom, location, 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 they knew where to plant the Smith General Store, right, where the traffic was going to be when all the boats would be just docked around waiting for loads to get loaded, and ship captains and crews wanted a place to get the stuff, and it was right there.
Yeah. Now, John Smith, who really developed the village, he was a part owner of the area that the village lies in for a long time, but he never really had any interest in the village. Matter of fact, when he relocated from Mount Olive, Smithtown near Bud Lake, he relocated to Waterloo area, but not to the village itself. He set up a small hamlet upriver from the village, and that's where he lived. It wasn't until the canal engineers decided that the canal should pass through the abandoned village of Waterloo that John Smith realized the potential, and he bought out his business partner, the co-landowner, and then his sons moved into the village and started doing all the renovations and the building that would be required and would take advantage of the canal traffic.
When you move in, and of course, railways came in, and you learn more about that part of the asset and the heritage of not just Waterloo Village, but Sussex County, what it meant. But when we move into that Victorian and early 20th century era, 1870 to 1950, you would think moving into more modern times would provide an easier existence opportunity. Was that actually more of the challenging times of Waterloo Village?
It was a challenging time. The canal was very popular but not profitable. It did create a spin-off effect for Waterloo and the entire region. During the Civil War, there was so much pressure for transportation needs to supply the armies in the field that the canal had its busiest period. Also, many roads were updated and leveled to make transportation by wagon easier, and the railroads were pushed to connect and to standardize the rail width so that they could move more supplies for the armies. That push on the railroads to interconnect and merge continued after the Civil War. It was so successful that it just continued, and that had a very serious impact, negative impact on the village because the canal no longer was necessary. What is surprising is that as the business in the village started to die in 1870, and it just died out almost like dropping off the edge of a cliff, the village continued to grow, and that was because of the accumulated wealth that the Smith family had gotten from their canal days when they operated the store, the gristmill, the sawmill, the tavern. All of the business there were owned by Smith family. And that's not they were not robber barons. They did not take unfair advantage of the people. They were very astute businessmen, very fair-minded, very religious, very staunch Methodists, and so they just grew and prospered because of their business acumen, but also brought with them many, many people that lived in the surrounding areas.
Got about a minute left here. John wraps up the book with an update of Waterloo today, and you point out some of the buildings that are there for everyone to see, what's original, what's been recreated, and some that there's no trace of that exists. Of that, no longer a trace of that exists, what's the biggest significant loss of architecture in Waterloo that, if we still had it today, would be of the greatest value, in your opinion?
In my opinion, and other people could object, but I think that the loss of the canal structures. Now, many of them are still there, but not in the finished format. Like the lock, the stone lock is still there. It's been filled in, although there's still a little bit of water flowing through it. But the attached aqueduct, which was timber, is long gone. And if that could be restored to the original engineering with the wooden aqueduct crossing over the mill tail races connected to the lock, that would be a tremendous engineering attraction for anybody to see. Also, the mule bridge, where the mules crossed from the other side of the river across the Lock Pond to continue their journey on the canal, that bridge is down. It's been down for many years. That prevents us from accessing the other side of the river, the Morris County side. And there's a whole part of the village over there that nobody can see, and nobody can get there to clean it up or work with it because it lies between the river and Route 80. So no one can get over there. There is a way to do it through the woods by walking through, but that's not really feasible to do any work over there. So archaeologists could have a field day over there because it's virtually untouched.
It is a fun book, instructive, insightful, too, to give you a clue of what's the pioneers, at least in our neck of the woods, literally and figuratively, were facing, and the amazing accomplishments, construction, engineering, otherwise, that they received. Fortunately, today, Waterloo once again is in the process of coming back from near extinction, as we've talked about often here on the show, through the various organizations, Friends of Waterloo Village, for example, and Friends of the Canal that are helping out and making sure that the living history stays alive in Waterloo Village. And John is making a huge contribution as well with this book, The Story of Waterloo Village, From Colonial Forge to Canal Town. John Giles, thanks so much for being here this morning.
Thank you very much, Chris. Hope to see you at Waterloo.